Attorney work product protects materials prepared by or for a party or its representative in anticipation of litigation. This is codified in rules of civil procedure, and again, it's this last prong that typically where the fight happens is anticipation of litigation. And the question is, were these documents prepared for litigation or for other purposes, such as ordinary business purposes? Covering privilege, we'll start with that. This is a trap for the unwary. I know we're typically in federal court in patent litigation, but I want to cover this because there's a nuance here. If we may find ourselves in state court for trade secret litigation or in other matters, there are some distinguishing features. So in Texas, the client representative who has someone who has authority to hire a lawyer or act on legal advice or make or receive a confidential communication. Again, this is in the Texas Rules of Evidence. So that's in Texas. But in other areas and certain states, they still follow the control group test. So I wanted to cover that because, again, we may find ourselves in a trade secret case outside of Texas or in some of these other jurisdictions, such as Alaska, Hawaii, Illinois, probably less Alaska, but Illinois and some of these other locations. And the control group test requires that the client representative must have a substantial role in directing the corporation's legal response. And the rationale, at least in these states that apply it, is that a broader privilege would be severely burdensome, allow corporations to shield their communications in silence and create a corporate zone of silence. So at least in this state, the control group test still applies. Does not apply under federal law. So, for example, in the patent litigations we find ourselves in, there's no control group test required as per the Upjohn case in 1983. One thing also, again, on keeping to attorney-client privilege for now, is how do we deal with former employees? Oftentimes, we may have to contact former employees, for example, maybe helping with some prior art, helping with understand product development, and help learn the facts of the case. So when dealing with former employees as the client, it's good to be particularly careful. Some courts treat former employees the same as the current employees. So the way you would communicate with your client's current employees, the same can apply to former employees. But that's not always the case. Some courts will limit those communications, such as in Eastern District of Michigan. They'll shield the communications under the rubric of privilege, but only if it's about issues within the unique knowledge of those former employees. And then some courts, and these are some state courts, do not extend privilege to any communications post-employment. So again, something to keep in mind when having to deal with former employees, especially when helping develop system art or your own prior art. So best practices, again, it's better not to let the client reach out to their former employees, but stay involved as the attorney. Limit discussions to employees to those with a need to know. It's also helpful, again, in case you find yourself in a place that's less inclusive of privilege, such as those that apply the control group test. Keep some notes for yourself or document or memorialize why you're contacting this particular employee and why you need this employee and not others. Again, it's just a matter of housekeeping, but it's good practice. And again, when dealing with former employees, best to limit the communications to those with dealing with what happened when they were at your client. One other thing I want to mention, just because of all the privilege logs I've had to deal with lately where just an attorney is copied on the communication, you see it in the CC line, and then not much other disclosure in the privilege log, is again, including, and many of you know this, but including attorney on the email does not guarantee privilege, and it's worth reminding clients about that, especially when they're dealing with engineers within the client, and then similarly just writing attorney work product or writing confidential on an email doesn't shield it, doesn't establish that email deserves privileged status. And courts generally are concerned that attorneys are acting as conduits for unprivileged information. So again, it's something to remind your clients about, especially when dealing with their engineers is that just because they copy the attorney doesn't make it privileged. So one topic that comes up a lot for when I'm having discussions with in-house counsel and what they have to deal with, and also in some of the privilege logs I've been going through lately, is mixed business and legal advice. It presents a thorny and blurry issue as to the dividing line between those communications that are for legal advice, which can and should be privileged, and those are that are considered business advice, business, technical, or other management advice. And this typically occurs when in-house counsel has multiple hats, such as that they're dealing with both business units and on the legal side. And it's difficult to determine if the document was prepared in anticipation of litigation, such a, so that it should be afforded work product, or in the ordinary course of business, or pursuant to some public requirement like tax returns, unrelated to litigation, in which case it would not be work product.